Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And away we go, hour number two of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. I'll get to Duke in just a second with their dud of a performance in the second half yesterday up against NC State. NC State advances to the Final Four. Well, they'll go up against Purdue. On the other side, you have UConn and Alabama. But today is April 1st, so it is April Fool's Day. And let me tell you, this may be my least favorite day of the year. And I'm all for practical jokes. I'm all for pranks. But you really realize how unfunny some people are with how many dumb, mock, fake sports trades there are. Like, they're not even creative. The one practical joke that I thought was really hilarious in sports was when the Phillies once told a pitcher he got traded to Japan. And he actually bought it. Like, that was funny. And you got the whole team in on it. But all these social media accounts today on X and on Instagram, TikTok, they're all like, oh, we got breaking news. Oh, this play, Devontae Smith of the Eagles just got traded. And like, you know, it's just not even true. So social media today, there's a lot of days it's insufferable. But today it's really insufferable. I'll give credit. One actual April Fool's prank in the sports world, I guess you could say this, actually made me chuckle today. And I thought it was a good one. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this guy, Dustin Sweetelson. He used to work at Sirius. He now works for VSiN. And he's like a producer, co-host of one of the VSiN shows. I knew him a little bit briefly when I worked at Sirius. So he puts out today a photo of what was thought to be his hand with the lady's hand with an engagement ring on it. And he tweeted out, I made an off-season acquisition. So this thing is up there. It's getting a ton of views. People are like, congratulations, so happy for you, blah, 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 blah. And I was just seeing this during the break. So after it being up for 6 or 7 hours and it not being real, he quote tweets it and he writes, I'm overwhelmed by the response to this post. I can't believe any of you believed I could have thumbs this ugly. Check the calendar. Like, that's pretty good. Because you look at the male hand that's grabbing the female's hand here, it is an ugly looking thumb. It is a grotesque hand that this man, whoever he got the picture, does have. So I thought that was the one good April Fool's joke that I did happen to see today. Like, I have a friend, every April Fool's Day, she texts me, and it's the same lame joke like every year. And I'm like, don't you people have anything better to do with your lives? And if you're going to do a prank, at least have it be funny. And I don't know if we'll do the Zach Gelb Show PSA this week because we're going to be in Arizona for the Final Four. And when we're usually on the road, we don't do that, we don't have enough time for segments like that. But that's my PSA for the week. That's my PSA for April Fool's Day. If you are going to make a joke, at least have the joke be funny. Santa, for some reason, And maybe I'm just dead wrong here, I felt like back in your day, you were a good practical jokester and you were a big prankster. Is that an incorrect read that I have of one Michael Santer?
I enjoyed practical jokes and I enjoyed being a prankster, but I was not very good at it.
No, you weren't? So you were unfunny is what you're saying?
It's not that I was necessarily unfunny. I just, my ideas always kind of fell flat. People saw right through it because they could tell that I'm a jokester and I'm a prankster.
So you had that reputation.
Yeah. So going into it, like, they, you know, even not on April Fool's, everyone takes everything I say with a grain of salt anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then on April Fool's, they immediately assume it's a joke. So I guess the better April Fool's would be for me to tell something serious and real, and people wouldn't believe it, and then that would be the April Fool's, that they're not believing this real thing all day.
Now, it wasn't an April Fool's, but the best prank I've ever played on someone. So I attended sleepaway camp for years, and I was working for the camp at that time. I was on, like, the quote-unquote senior staff, and there was a newer member of the senior staff who I actually ended up becoming good friends with and still am friends with this person to this day. But when you walk into a place and you're the new guy, you got to be careful how you walk into a place. Like, if you come into that place hot, like the BMOC, big man on campus, naturally people are just going to be irritated by you. And it's not a good first impression. So this person, who ended up becoming a very good friend, he rubbed some people the wrong way because he came in, right? I'm in charge. I'm the BMOC. So his first off day, and he had like his own cabin. It was like a pretty good spot. Like on his first off day, everyone's like, oh, we got to prank this guy. We got to humble him a little bit. So I came up with the idea of water cupping his entire apartment at the sleepaway camp. So every spot, square footage of the floor, by his bed, in his shoes, in the shower, in the bathroom where the toilet was, in between the cubbies, as you would say, which is where you store your clothes and everything. Everywhere this guy had to go when he walked back into his apartment, there was water. And there was cups filled with water. I think that was the best practical joke I was ever able to pull on someone. And when we saw this guy, because you come back from your off day, it's like 12:30 at night, 12 o'clock at night, you got to be signed back in by. We just heard him open the door and let out a scream. And it was just so worth it. And eventually you have to knock a few of the cups down and then you'll clean them up the next day. But he was like tiptoeing and you just kept on hearing someone scream, ah, bleep, because once one of the cups did go, about like 8 or 9 of them did fall right after that. So that was the best practical joke that I've ever did play on somebody. But anyway, you got something to say about that, Santa?
Yeah, that's a good one. I like it. So my favorite practical joke, the one that I always love to tell, I won't.
Is this the popcorn in the movie theater again?
No. I've never pulled that. I've only seen it in the movies, about the movies. Someone who I know, I won't release who, was in class, and the teacher walked into class. I guess it was like on the second, third floor of the school. And she walks in, and there's this big commotion, and everyone's screaming and yelling. She's like, what's going on?
Okay.
And she walks in, and there at the window is this guy. And he's screaming, hold on, I got you, I got you, don't let go.
This is morbid.
And she's freaking out. She runs to the window, and just as she gets to the window, the guy falls back, holding two shoes in his hand, screaming, no!
This is in high school?
Yes. The teacher runs to the window, looks out the window,
smokes,
and sees someone laying three floors below, like they just fell out of the window, and he just stood up and said, April Fool's.
That's like,
scared the absolute crap out of
honestly,
her. She lost her mind.
That person should be thrown in jail. That's like a morbid.
That's
prank.
Amazing. Absolutely hilarious.
And you were you in high school at the time?
I was not in high school at the time. The person was a little bit older than I was. I just heard the story later. I ended up having that teacher.
Did you ask her about it?
Oh, yes. And she says to this day she still has nightmares about it.
Yeah, That's really scary. That would not fly in today's world whatsoever.
That's very funny.
Anyway, let's get to Duke. You know, it's kind of crazy that it's only been 2 years of John Shire as the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils. It seems like it's been more than that, which I don't know if that's a good thing for Duke. And don't get me wrong. John Shire has the potential to be a really good head coach. It's not like they've ever had a bad season with him on the job. But when you take over a brand like that, and you are used to, as a fan, of seeing your team be the best and be a national championship, multiple-time national championship-winning program, even though you have to be understanding and lenient and you got to be patient with the new guy coming in. I know John Shire was one of their own and he was on Coach K's staff and all that, but his first time being a head coach, there has to be an adjustment period. But ultimately, the fans are going to say, not that you have to go win four or five championships, but you eventually have to restore a national championship to the university and bring one to the university. And you look at Duke, there were some ups and downs last year, and then people were believing in them as they did go into the tournament, and they didn't make it out of the first weekend where they lost in the second round. This year, like, not a lot of people were talking about Duke heading into the tournament. And then when Duke was sitting there in the second weekend of the tourney, and albeit they right had Vermont and James Madison in the first round, they're showing in the Sweet 16. A lot of people praise Duke for beating Houston, but you go back to that game and you had the injury to the star Houston player and still Duke wasn't pulling away. I looked at that performance where, yes, everyone's praising Duke for beating Houston, but I never thought it was going to translate into a championship run. Because in a way, even when you won and you get praised for something, I thought there were warts, I thought there were flaws with this Duke team. But yesterday, Duke is going up against NC State. And at halftime, Duke is up 27-21. That's not an insurmountable lead, let's be clear. But when you're up 27-21 and you have no heart, you have no fight, and you don't show up in the second half, it's a dud. It's a big-time dud and a big-time letdown by the Duke Blue Devils. And I don't think a lot of people today are talking about the fall of Duke in that game because we all love a big fella. DJ Burns Jr. has captured all of our hearts, and he's won them over. And NC State's been this great story. So just naturally, when you look at this game, we are right away more attracted to the NC State story. And that's not always the time when you look at a game that the winner is the one that we only solely talk about. But the NC State run is such a Cinderella type of run. Coach was about to get fired. They were like 17-14, something like that. They go in the ACC tournament. They win five games in 5 days. They win the ACC tournament. And now here we are. We're like, holy crap. They've taken this all the way to a Final Four run. Well, they'll go up against Purdue on Saturday evening. But once you take a breath, and once we fully allow the NC State story to marinate, the future of Duke, to me, is fascinating. And it's not just in college basketball, but it's also potentially what we could see happening in college football. Because we had Kalen DeBoer, friend of the show, you guys know me, I think Kalen DeBoer is going to be a stud. But Duke has had two okay years, two good years, but the standard at Duke is to win a national championship. And year one, they had a letdown in the tourney under John Shire. And in year two, yes, they got to an Elite Eight, but they had an extremely flat performance in the second half of that Elite Eight game where a spot to the Final Four was certainly in reach and definitely attainable. So the future of Duke to me, and I know Duke's bringing in a massive recruiting class, but I'm just wondering how we're going to talk about Duke 5 years from now. And I wonder if the luster and the appeal of Duke is going to fall off. Like, we all know Duke is always going to be a great basketball school. But losing Coach K is such a big adjustment in so many ways. And as a neutral fan, right, as just a fan of college hoops, I've never really hated Duke. But I know, like, when I used to work with Ryan Hickey, he was like, screw Coach K. I can't stand Coach K. This retirement tour is ridiculous. And I'm like, no, it's not. This is one of the greatest coaches of all time. If he wants to go out a certain way, let him go out that way. So I never found, for me, individually, Duke to be polarizing. Now, I know Duke is polarizing from Leitner to Krzyzewski and everything else, right, that has come with Duke. But a lot of times Duke's polarizing because they've won. And the last 2 years, like even when Duke lost the other night, like if this was 3 years ago, people would be celebrating. People would be doing the worm in the streets. Like, it'd be crazy how much elation a team losing would bring. But now taking Coach K out of the picture, until Duke wins a championship again, I know that if you ask a UNC fan, if you hate Duke, they'll always say yes. And there's some teams in the ACC that will always hate Duke. But I don't think the national hatred of Duke is there right now. And we'll see if John Shire could ultimately lead this program being back to a national championship contender. And if he does, and if he wins a championship, then I'm sure that that natural hatred and jealousy will pop back up. But I think we're at a very interesting time in college sports right now, Samter, where we've seen so many legendary coaches that were the face of their sport walk away, and you still have two incredibly large brands in Alabama and in Duke. And Shire's been good the last 2 years, but he hasn't been great. And look, like when you talk about John Shire, he's only been the coach for 2 years, and it seems a lot longer than that because we're people that expect certain things. And when things happen one way for such a long time and through decades and decades and decades, you just think it's never going to end. But when careers end like Saban and Coach K, that next guy that's up is in an incredibly tough situation where a guy like Shire has been successful. But we know that when you lose a game to NC State and you lose and don't show up in the second half at the spot in the Final Four to the line, now people are going to question if you are the right guy for the job.
No, that's definitely, I mean, you know, we talked with Kellen DeBoer about it. Following a legend is never an easy thing to do. And you have to have immediate success because when you come in there, you're typically taking over a roster that legend mm-hmm. recruited. So there's high expectations. But especially in college basketball, it's a little bit different.
Because of the one and dones?
Because of the one and dones. And you see some of the programs that are starting to have success. It's these schools that have guys stay around for 2, 3, 4 years, like Houston and UConn. Like, these are the programs that are winning. And it's almost, in a sense, it almost hurts. We heard this from Luke Hancock, I think, last week. It almost hurts a team or program when they recruit the best players. Like, what are they supposed to do, not recruit the best players?
Yeah.
But when you recruit the best players, most likely the majority of them are going to be one and done and off to the NBA. So it's like it's a catch-22. It almost behooves a program to try to recruit guys in that, like, 15 to 30, 15 to 40 range, because maybe they'll stay for 2 or 3 years, and then your program has a better chance
of
winning.
You know what it really is?
It's really interesting.
I still think you hit recruiting hard, and you try to still bring in the one-and-dones, but then you got to ace the transfer portal. Like, for example, Alabama lost their best player in Brandon Miller. And look at the amount of people they've been able to bring in from the transfer portal. And at times it got rocky this year because it's tough to build chemistry, but now they have them firing on all cylinders. That, like, I think a lot of times people say, you gotta find a way to bring in guys that are more 3 or 4 year players. I don't even think that's true. I just think now when you bring in veterans in the transfer portal, you just have to find a way to get that immediate success from those players in the transfer portal right away. And if you don't do that, then the team falls and disappoints, and you see players that are younger get exposed on a big stage, and when no one shows up, that's when we start to go to, okay, well then, maybe they need to start recruiting older immediately and getting under the watch. I just think in this new era of the transfer portal and name, image, and likeness, like, we all try to say what is the right way, but I don't think there is a right way, really. Like, you look at Alabama, there's a lot of transfers on that team. Purdue, Zach Edey has been there forever. You know, UConn is better this year, and they lost some players from last year. So it's very tough, but here's the difference. Duke and Kentucky, even, like, let's say if they got rid of Coach Cal, those are legendary programs, and I don't think they'll ever fade. But then yet again, it's like you look at a Louisville, you look at an Indiana, and how much both of those programs, especially Indiana, has just fallen off the map. So these next 5 years, all I'm saying is I wonder how we're talking about Duke and Alabama 5 years from now. And you got to win one championship. And I think DeBoer will win a championship at Alabama. And quite frankly, I think Shire will win a championship as well at Duke. But the year one expectation for DeBoer, you got to at least make the playoff. And you look at that schedule, it could be better than just making the playoff. But for John Shire, it's been 2 years. It's been fine. He's been good. But, you know, fans are still going to be saying, okay, is he the guy to win the championship? Like, look at Hubert Davis at UNC. Got to the championship the first year, missed the tournament. And then this year, they exceeded expectations. But then come the tournament, they didn't meet what the new expectations were. So we're living in a world of unknown, and it's always tough to replace a legend. But it's not like Davis nor John Shire have fallen on their face since replacing Roy Williams and then also Mike Krzyzewski. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Here we go again. LeBron James talking about his future. How much longer will LBJ be the king of the NBA?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Ian Eagle's going to join us coming up in about 35 minutes from now. Also joining us later on in the show at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific, Nick Pringle from the Alabama Crimson Tide basketball team just took over the Elite Eight down the stretch. He's going to jump on board with us after their great victory against Clemson. And now Alabama is off to the Final Four, and in Phoenix, Arizona, on Saturday, they will be going up against the UConn Huskies. Hey, by the way, Samter, there's a pizza place in Phoenix that everyone talks about. What is it? A Pizza Bianco?
Pizzeria Bianco.
Is it that good since you used to live in Phoenix?
When you live in Arizona for 7 years, it's the best pizza you've ever had in your entire life. When you've been back, so I've been there like 6 or 7 times. Mm-hmm. And I was there mostly when I lived in Arizona, and I loved it. But then when I came back to New York and had like real New York pizza, Bleecker Street and Joe's, and
yeah,
and then I went back and had Pizzeria Bianco, I'm like, it's good, but there's like a dozen places as good or better in New York. It's very good. It's really good for Arizona. It's through the roof for Arizona pizza.
But compared to pizza that we're used to, like I think New Haven pizza is the best pizza. I love New York pizza as well. Here's always a controversial take. I think Long Island pizza is better than New York City pizza. There's some
just don't say Chicago is better than any of those.
Well, no, that's like a sandwich pretty much with that deep dish pizza. That's like dessert pizza.
It is. It really is. It's something else. It's a stew. It's
no,
a quiche.
No. It's still very good though. Like if you want to tell me that Chicago has some of the best pizza, okay, I'm not really going to crush you for that. But I never thought going to Phoenix, Arizona, that I need to get pizza, but everyone tells me I have to go to this place, Pizza Bianco. Now, there's two different locations. One had reservations, but the main traditional joint, it's just walk-up only. Now, we're going to be there for 3 days, and our hours there are 12 to 3 p.m. Pacific. So is there like, if we went there at like 3:30 right after the show, because we're broadcasting, it's like 5 minutes, you'd think the wait's going to be that bad at 3:30 p.m. Eastern.
No, I think if we go like at 3:30, it'll be past the lunch rush.
And before the dinner rush.
So I think we should be okay. There might still be a little bit of a wait, but here's the thing. The
like 20 minutes?
Yeah, maybe. But like worst
case, we'll go sunbathing outside the pizza place.
Yeah,
it'd
worst case scenario, we
bring
put our names in, we grab a drink, we hang out.
Yeah,
we'll be fine. It's not the worst thing in the world if we have to wait 20, 30 minutes or whatever. We'll be fine. I don't think it's been more than a 30-minute wait at that time of the day.
Okay.
If you go there for lunch, you go there for dinner, you'll be waiting for hours.
So let's do that.
Especially with the Final Four there.
Well, I won't really eat much for breakfast that day. You know, maybe have a protein bar. And we'll go have a nice big lunch at Pizza Bianco coming up on either Wednesday or Thursday, whenever you want to do it. Maybe Wednesday's the best day.
Well, Wednesday will be a little bit tougher because Wednesday we're going to be broadcasting from a different location that's a little bit farther away.
Okay.
Actually, the other location is probably closer to the other Pizzeria Bianco.
Yeah, but
if you're
going to
go to the original.
I want to go to the real thing. I want to go to the traditional joint, regular place.
We could try it on Wednesday, but we probably won't get there till closer to 4.
So you're saying more Thursday.
We'll see.
And Santa needs to get situated in the hotel. He needs to unpack all of his stuff. Hey, okay, I'll do Thursday with
you. Well, both of us. I think Thursday's probably better, but we'll see. Listen, we'll go back to the hotel. We'll drop all of our stuff off because we're going right from the airport right to the studio to do our Wednesday show.
Hopefully we get there. A lot of bad weather.
If we get there in time with all the weather and everything, but you know, we come back if we have time to drop our stuff off, walk over there, and there's not a huge wait, then I'll go on Wednesday. I don't mind.
Now you have to find another place too, because if we're gonna get pizza, I need like a traditional spot.
No, there's a few really good, I mean, it's Arizona, great Mexican spots.
That's what I'm saying.
Really good Mexican spots. I know a few, and I'll show you around to a few different places.
Okay, we got a good tour guide here, Michael Samter. He knows the back of his hand.
Three of my favorite restaurants
shut down.
Have shut down. Now there's a place that I tried for the first time the last time I was there for the Super Bowl that is an absolute go-to that I'm gonna have to go back to. It's like a wine and pizza place, but it's like not just pizza. They have everything. It was so good. It was like artisan kind of stuff.
Okay,
really, really cool place.
Samter is a big foodie. I usually trust Samter's opinion on food. Some other things I won't trust his opinion on, but when it comes to food, I don't think I've ever had a bad meal with Michael Samter.
I'm just upset the Italian Grotto is not there for you. That's my favorite all-time Italian place in the world.
A lot of Italian food in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, it's so
really
good. The guy's from the Bronx. The guy's from New York. It was awesome. So good, the food.
Alrighty, let's hear from LeBron James. This was after last night. LeBron James, there's always some drama with the king. He's the drama king. Let's hear from LeBron about how much longer he will play.
Not very long. I'm on the other side, obviously at a hill, so I'm not going to play another 21 years. That's for damn sure, but not very long. I don't know when that door will close as far as when I retire, but I don't have much time left.
I'll say this about LeBron James. Now, I don't think just because he's talking about retirement now and saying that he doesn't have that much time left in the league, that retirement is going to occur this offseason. There's like the hot take of the day. I don't think LeBron James is avoiding a year of fanfare and a tour to just walk off into the sunset and walk away from the game with no fanfare nor buzz. Like, that would be the complete opposite in the way that LeBron James has kind of operated the last 20 years. But LeBron is approaching a big number, and that's coming your way in December. And that's the big 4-0 where he turns 40. I kind of feel that next season's going to be LeBron James's next season, last season in the NBA. I think LeBron will retire after next season. Not this season, at the end of this season, but next season. And the reason I say that is it doesn't look like Bronny is going to be going to the NBA this offseason in the draft. If that changes, then it could really alter what I'm about to say. But I think this dream that LeBron had about playing with his son in the NBA was his dream, but it wasn't his son's dream. So if Bronny comes back for another year at USC, and I know USC just lost their coach because Andy Enfield ended up becoming the new head coach of SMU, and he walked away voluntarily. I don't know if there's more to that behind the scenes. Then let's say Bronny plays one more year at USC then wants to go to the NBA. It's kind of like put up as a front. Oh, LeBron is retiring because his son maybe doesn't want to play on the same basketball court with him or be on the same team with him because he wants to do his own thing. And then you could look at it, LeBron gets out at a nice number, playing in the NBA until the age of 40. So I don't think he's lying there when he says the end is near. I don't think that's going to be this offseason, but I kind of feel like he has one more year left in him. Stu, where are you at right now with LeBron James? I know you're kind of tired of everything with King James, you being the Laker fan on this show, but do you feel as if, like, right now, LeBron James, I ask you, how many more seasons in the NBA? What would your answer be?
After this season, I say he plays two more.
Two more?
I think he does play two more, yes.
Are those both with the Lakers? Because he could get out of that contract this year.
I don't. I still think he goes somewhere else.
You think he goes somewhere this offseason, or does he sign back for 1 year with the Lakers and then go somewhere after that to wrap it up?
I think he plays one more with the Lakers after this, and then he goes somewhere else for his final year.
Back to Cleveland?
Maybe. Or maybe something to do with Bronny or something. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah, I just, with how much LeBron has already backtracked on the Bronny thing, it's just a guess. I really do believe that was LeBron's vision and not his kid's vision. And he practically almost said that a year ago. He's like, that's my dream. I don't know if that's Bronny's dream. So it's always weird on the speculation front on this, but I'll go one more year for LeBron James in the NBA. Samter?
I think that he'll have one more year after this year, with or without Bronny. But here's a question I have, and I know the LeBron MJ debate.
Please don't do this.
It's not LeBron MJ, necessarily.
Okay.
But, like, yes, he won a title in the bubble for the Lakers.
Yeah.
COVID year. Not taking it away. He won a title.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, first round lost, missed the playoffs, swept in the conference finals.
Oh, just getting to the conference finals last year was
sure, but they were also, what, they were the 7 seed, 8 seed?
Yeah.
And they just made a nice run. They weren't expected to go, but they got hot at the right time. That's all that matters. And this year, again, play-in tournament. There's been kind of this fizzle towards the end of his career, right? We've seen a lot of superstars leave at the end.
Mm-hmm.
With MJ, John Elway left on a high note. Peyton Manning left on a high note.
Yeah.
Even Brady, to an extent, left on a high note. Super Bowl, conference championship. Then they lost in the divisional.
Or wild card.
Wild card. It was the wild card. That's right.
Yeah, they were 8-9.
So the question
is, Dallas. First time Dallas ever beat Brady.
Does it change anything with LeBron?
No.
That he has this fizzle, that our last memories of LeBron.
Because when he's on the court, he's playing great. The problem is, he just hasn't been healthy. We haven't really ever seen LeBron suffer big injuries where he's missed a lot of time until he's got to L.A. We get accustomed because we've seen so many athletes play now into their 40s that everyone's just going to be able to do it. The body isn't designed to play that many years in a sport that requires you to be on your feet for that long. Like, his individual numbers are still great. The teams haven't been great. But I don't think anyone is going to look back at LeBron James 15 years from now and say, yeah, the last 2-3 years, the team wasn't that great with the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't think anyone will hold that against him, unless you are a Jordan stan, right? And you just hate LeBron James to hate LeBron James.
Yeah, and listen, I'm not saying it knocks him out of, like, the top 2 or 3 conversation.
No, he's the second greatest player ever.
So, but that's part of the conversation, right? Has his ability to surpass MJ gone away at this point because of, you know, after he won that bubble title, everyone was like, okay, he's won.
Going down a dangerous road here. I hate going down this road.
It's not necessarily the MJ conversation.
It opens up a can of worms to just idiots. That's what it does. Because it doesn't matter what side of the fence you're on. If you're on the Jordan side of the fence, you treat it as if LeBron James is some bum. If you're on the LeBron side of the fence, you treat it as if MJ is some bum. And you could say the greatest words into the microphone. Stu could say his greatest words into the microphone. I could say the greatest words that I've ever said into a microphone. And we'll have people call in at 855-212-4CBS, and we'll be like, oh, but LeBron had to go to a bunch of different teams. Or MJ this, you know, MJ's not as physical as LeBron. He's not as big as LeBron. It's my least favorite conversation in sports. Least favorite. I'm not entertaining that conversation today on this show. Will not do it. It is the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back with a news brief. Ian Eagleslow to come at the top of the hour. Nick Pringle from Alabama will join us as well at 5:20 p.m. Eastern, 2:20 p.m. Pacific today. Update time first, though. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
The Golden State Warriors are on a 4-game winning streak, with those 4 wins all occurring on the road in Miami, Orlando, Charlotte, and then last night up against San Antonio in San Antonio. They have won back-to-back games, though, since the Draymond Green ejection. So that ejection motivated them, and now the Warriors are on a hot streak. But it is crazy the difference between the Warriors at home compared to the road this season, because they are usually a great home team. Like last year, at home, they were 33-8, and on the road, they were 11-30. This season, when you look at the splits from home against the road, they're 18-19 this year at home. They are 22-15 away from their home arena. Let's hear Steph Curry on the success on the road this year. This courtesy of NBC Sports Bay Area.
We might need to like stay in a hotel in San Francisco and act like it's a road game. Like they do in football, stay in the hotel the night before. I don't know what it is about, the road Warriors. We've kept our season alive, with our road performance. So it means a lot. And we're going to have what it's looking like. We're going to have to do that to get into the playoffs. So something to rely on.
Uh-oh. Are the road Warriors about to get hot? Are they about to go make a crazy run in the Western Conference? I don't think so still. I think they'll make the playoffs, or actually, let me revise that statement. I think they'll make the play-in tournament. We'll see if they're going to be able to win to get in to the actual playoffs, which would be the eighth seeds. But right now, they have a little separation. Not much, but they have been able to separate themselves a little bit from the Rockets than where it was at the end of last week. Golden State 40-34. And the Rockets' win streak did come to a close. They're now 38-36, so we'll see how the rest of the season does play on out. Here is Zach Edey, Purdue, from embarrassment a year ago, losing to a 16 seed in Fairleigh Dickinson, to the other day punching its ticket to the Final Four. Here is Zach Edey with Evan Washburn after the game.
What was your mentality in this game?
They thought they knew us, man. They thought they knew what we had in our hearts. I promise you they didn't. We're winners. That's what we do.
I love that. By the way, Evan Washburn did an incredible job in that interview. And here's why. You watch that interview and you know you're on television, you're not allowed to curse. Usually when someone curses, like the host or the producers get like all flustered. Evan Washburn, as cool as a cucumber, just asked his next question, kind of smiled and said, okay, we'll deal with whatever what happens from it. It's not his responsibility. And you just keep it moving. And he kept it cool and calm. And I think Edey realized, okay, I got to reel it in a little bit. But Edey, after the game, man, said some interesting stuff on the court after the game, and then an old video surfaced of him at a party. And let's just say Zach Edey was he scores both on and then off the court as well. Let's go to Danny Hurley, the new face of college basketball. His team looking to go back-to-back. They'll play Alabama on Saturday evening to try to get to the national championship game for the second straight year in a row. Here is Dan Hurley pulling a little extra motivation from tweets.
Sean Harrington, who was a good player, was a McDonald's All-American, one of the staff members, wanted to add a little more fuel to my fire, a little, something. UConn has not had to play against this physical a team, and they've never seen someone like Terrence Shannon, something along those lines. And, statements like that are just asinine. You're going against beasts and monsters every night in the Big East, and the Big East prepared us for teams like Illinois.
I give credit to Maggie Gray. She pointed this out. Danny Hurley has a Jim Harbaugh type of vibe to him, where even when you don't think there would be a lot of things you should get motivated by, there's a way that you find the way to get motivated by. And don't get me wrong, like going into that game against Illinois, Terrence Shannon was the best player going into that game. It didn't mean Illinois was going to win this game. But I do like how UConn has turned it out to be, not that they're an underdog, but people are doubting them. And that's what makes a great coach. When you have a maniac like that, and I say that in a positive way, who's able to find little things, inane things, and make them to his team like they're a big deal, where they're questioning your physicality and they're questioning your toughness. And you saw it was personal for UConn as they did go on a 30-0 run from the end of the first half leading over into the start of the second half, which was just absolutely incredible. Let's go to DJ Burns, the Cinderella darling of the tournament. I know people are going to say, he originally started at Tennessee, though, before going to Winthrop and now finding his way at NC State, but if NC State wasn't in the ACC, if they weren't in one of these big conferences, everyone would be calling them a Cinderella because they weren't supposed to make the tournament. In the ACC tournament, they win 5 games in 5 days. They get their coach an extension where he was on the verge of getting fired, and now they're somehow, some way in the Final Four. And DJ Burns, the big fella, has been sensational. Here was his interview after the game with CBS's Tracy Wilson.
There's just been a total switch in our commitment. Nobody's being late to things. Nobody's, you know, being a problem on the court. Everybody's come together. I don't know what it is, but everybody's handling on and off the court well.
I wonder how much of that was player speak and then how much of that was reality. Because once again, this team was 17-14. And did players like just start showing up time because, oh, we're in the ACC tournament? Or, oh, now we're in the NCAA tournament and they haven't lost since getting into that ACC tournament? I don't know. But I did think that sounded like it was directed towards one person. But I can't quite put my finger on who that person was, because then at the end he was like, oh, I don't know, actually. So very bizarre. Let's go to Caitlin Clark. She's getting set to square up against Angel Reese once again. You have Iowa and LSU later this evening at 7 p.m. Eastern. Here is Caitlin Clark on facing her old pal Angel Reese once again.
Me and Angel have always been great competitors. Obviously, she played in the Big Ten for a while to begin her career, and that's what makes women's basketball so fun is, you know, you have great competition, and that's what we've had all year long. But I think Angel would say the same, is like, it's not just us in women's basketball. That's not the only competitive thing about where our game is at, and that's what makes it so good.
And let's hear from Angel Reese on her relationship with Caitlin Clark.
Me and Caitlin Clark don't hate each other. Like, I want everybody to understand that it's just a super competitive game, and like, I would just wish people realize that, like, once I get between those lines, it's no friends. I have plenty of friends on the court that I talk to outside of the game, but like, when I get between those lines, like, we're not friends, we're not buddies. I'm gonna talk trash to you, I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get in your head the whole entire game, but after the game we can kick it. Like, I don't think people really realize that, and that's fine. I'll take the villain role. I'll take the hit for it, but I know we're going women's basketball, and if this is the way we're going to do it, then this is the way we're going to do it. You like it or you don't.
We've seen great rivalries before in sports. Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady. It's just weird how this one's being covered, where you have athletes that get on the court, they both talk trash, they're both intense on the court, but like, people actually think there's legit animosity and hatred between these two ladies, and Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. I don't think that's the case. Like, I had no big deal. I thought it was no big deal last year when Angel Reese was doing the "you can't see me" thing to Caitlin Clark. I thought it was fun. And I think both of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese realize what they've done for women's basketball, where this women's tournament, I don't know what the ratings will be. I don't know what the overall views will be, but it seems like, and I watch more of the men's tournament, but it seems like there's been more buzz to the women's tournament than the men's tournament because of the stars that you know in the women's game. From not only Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, but to Juju Watkins at USC, Paige Buckets, and you have South Carolina with Dawn Staley as their head coach trying to go on an undefeated run. So I don't know, Santer, the coverage of this, it seems like they're trying to build this up as it's all Caitlin Clark against Angel Reese, and they hate each other. They hate each other on the basketball court. There's a big difference with athletes hating each other on the court because you want to win and you're a competitor, than compared to hating someone off the court.
It just reminds me, I don't know if you remember this, back in the 2008 Olympics, Kobe was teammates with Powell on the Lakers.
Yeah.
They were good friends and they were teammates. First quarter of the game, Kobe runs through a screen and levels Pow. Just knocked him to the floor. He even told the guys before the game, "I'm going to go after my guy." Mm-hmm. He didn't help him up. He gave him a stare down.
Competition.
It's one of those things where it's like, I hate you right now. And that's kind of what we want to see. We want to see athletes between the lines. I don't want to say hate, but that I want that competitive fire to come out.
Oh, I'll say
and
it.
All friendships. All, mm-hmm. you know, fair play and sportsmanship, sure, but all other kinds of just like friendship and credulity, gone, out of the window. You do whatever it takes to win.
It's my biggest problem with the NBA. I don't sense any rivalries in the NBA anymore. But in the NFL, there's still rivalries. In hockey, there's still rivalries. In college football, there's still rivalries. And in women's basketball, there's obviously rivalries. And it kind of stinks that this is the Elite Eight, but you take this matchup whenever you get it. And here we are. By the way, on that, here's Kim Mulkey on LSU, Iowa. She doesn't really love that it's an Elite Eight game.
We talk about growing the game. Didn't that national championship game have the highest ratings ever in women's basketball? So you're probably going to anticipate this one will too, but it needs to be at the Final Four.
Once again, I take this matchup when you get it. I did think it was peculiar that they didn't have this potential road happen in the Final Four, and it's to go to the Final Four. I guess they wanted a greater chance of actually seeing this matchup, so maybe that was the committee's thinking. But this is by far and away the biggest game of the tournament. And that's no disrespect to what happens afterwards, because there's so many other storylines that are still going to be fun to watch. Like, the game after this one tonight should be really fun between UConn and USC. And you still have the South Carolina story too, but nothing's going to top this game tonight for the sport. Ian Eagle will join us next. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.